in the healing of the lame man. Again, as he preached that sermon, he emphasizes again, verse 20, chapter 3 of Acts, that he may send Jesus Christ who was preached to you before. Verse 22, Moses truly said to the fathers, Lord, your God raised up a prophet like me from your brethren. And he says, this is now that prophet. And notice the emphasis, verse 26, to you first God, having raised up his servant Jesus, sent him to bless you in turning away every one of you from your iniquities. Talk about the resurrection power. Look at chapter 4, verse 30. It talks about signs and wonders may be done. They pray for signs and wonders to be done. And then verse 33. And with great power, the apostles give witness to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. And you can find in the first sermon that Paul preached in the book of Acts chapter 13, his emphasis is the resurrection. Verse 30, chapter 13 of Acts. But God raised him from the dead. God raised him from the dead. Verse 33. God has fulfilled this for us, their children, in that he has raised up Jesus from the dead. When Paul stood before all the philosophers, the Greek philosophers, chapter 17 of the book of Acts, his main thrust and emphasis is in verse 31. Because he has appointed a day to which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead. See, my friends, the resurrection is a keynote of the church. The cross and the resurrection, they go together. So even in the first portion, you find the Passover, the cross, and the resurrection. Talks about resurrection power. Now you compare the book of Exodus to the church now, and you see the same comparison. That the first part of the book of Exodus was a revelation of the exceeding greatness of His power. Now the second portion in the book of Acts. Within that second portion, you have two parts. You have in the book of Exodus, chapter 16, the manna coming down. And then you have in the book of Exodus, chapter 20, the Ten Commandments being given. And then later on, after a period of backsliding, in Exodus, chapter 33, Moses meets the Lord. In chapter 34, he has the new tablets again, right? So, in the book of Exodus, three sections. In the first section, you have the exceeding greatness of His power. In the second section, you have the manna which represent the riches of His inheritance in the saints. And what He was supposed to have in the first section was put forward to the third section because He broke the Ten Commandments. He broke the tablets of the Ten Commandments. Then, in the third section, which is from Exodus chapter 25, right to Exodus chapter 40, there we have the new Ten Commandments given, which is representing the hope of His high calling. So exactly, you had the division in the book of Exodus. Now in the middle section, what you deal with is mainly the law. There were three areas of law. Number one, Exodus chapter 20. In the middle portion, Exodus chapter 20, you have the moral laws, the moral commandments. Now, the moral commandments remain unchanged. If you read the New Testament and you're a Bible scholar and trace everywhere where the Ten Commandments came out, you can trace all nine. The only commandment you couldn't find in the New is the law on the Sabbath. You find that all the moral commands are still in effect today. Ten Commandments never change. They remain God's high point of righteousness that He wants His people to hit. But the second type of law, called the judgment, then He used different words in the book of Exodus chapter 21 verse 1. You notice He used different words now. If you study the Old Testament, it's interesting. He sometimes used the word law or commandments. When He used that, then He's talking about moral laws that are unchangeable, immutable. When he uses the word judgment, he's talking about social laws. And social laws, and this is the difference, it is not directly applicable in method. It is only directly applicable in principle. Then the third group is called the religious laws. The ordinances. He uses the word ordinances. So when he used the word ordinances, every one of those ordinances today have been replaced by the new ordinances of the Lord Jesus Christ. So you must divide the laws of the Old Testament into three groupings. If you don't, you will become like some extreme Christians who take some of the judgments and put it for everybody. Like, for example, a woman should not wear men's clothing. How? You go to the supermarket, all unisex. Even the hairstyles are unisex. And how they take some of the commandments that are under judgment and they try to put that yoke on believers. Because you must understand that judgments must be taken on a different category. When you deal with judgments given in the time of Moses, you take the principles and leave off the methods. Let's give an example here. Like for example, chapter 21. We know in chapter 21 that he's talking about slavery, although they use a polite word servant, the Hebrew word slave. That's why we are showing here that you could take the Bible and twist it to prove your own thing if you want. Long ago, when slavery was an issue in the world, today it's no more. Today, everyone recognizes slavery is wrong. But do you know in the days of Abraham Lincoln when they were trying to go against slavery, they were ministers of God who preached on the pulpit and defended that the Bible allows, advocates and permits slavery. How did they manage to do it? They took from the judgment. You could take that and prove that slavery still is allowed by God and still can exist today. But what the Bible is trying to tell us here is that in the situation that they are in, there were certain ethical judgments that God pronounced, that the principles behind it are the key to run our life today. Not swallow it lock, stock and barrel. Hook, line, sinker, fisherman, boat and sea. Exodus 21, you find here, some of the things look very cruel in our modern terms of justice and righteousness today. You see in verse 3, if the slave comes in and he shall go out by himself. If the slave married while he is a slave, and the slave in verse 4 has children and a wife, sons and daughters, when a slave goes, he has to leave his wife and children behind because here it says the wife and children are the property of the master. How are you going to apply that? You mean that when an employee works under you, gets married, and to another employee under you, when they leave the work, they have to leave their wife with you? Well, that would be very silly. The most cruel thing you could ever think of. No, the principle he's talking about here is principles of ownership. So he's trying to draw a line. What benefits are gained under certain employment? To a certain extent, as long as you're under that banner, under that company, however it belongs to your company, you're making use of your company. So the rightness and wrongness of a businessman who has drawn a certain salary and then he goes out and makes use of his company for some other business and person assume that they are representing the company, takes that as a sideline, takes it, well, after all, this is my private business. But wait a minute, the person will never do business with you if you were not in that company in the first place. So these principles you're violating. Your conscience doesn't agree, although your mind rationalizes it away. So we draw principles. You see, there are other principles here that you find very difficult to directly apply in a modern sense. In chapter 21, it tells you, so your social responsibility. Chapter 21, let's look at verse 19 and 20. If he rises again and walks about outside with his staff, then he who struck him shall be acquitted. He shall only pay for the loss of his time and shall provide for him to be thoroughly healed. Now it tells you the principle behind it is how much responsibility you bear to an injury you cause to another person. You have to compensate the exact cause. So take that principle and apply it. But not the direct methodology. Because a lot of all these things, you try to draw it hook, line, sinker, you find it doesn't apply. Like in chapter 21, not many people own an ox. I haven't seen one here lately. So how do you apply? Well, that talks about private property. See, in verse 28, if an ox gores a man or woman in death, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be acquitted. But if the ox tended to thrust with its horn in times past, and has been made known to his owner, and he has not kept it confined so that he has killed a man or woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner shall be put to death. So let's take an example here. Supposing you don't own an ox, but you own a car. Your car, I know here all your cars are very new. Let's say you're in an old Malaysian town. African town, Timbuktu, somewhere. You're driving a 25-year-old car. And your brakes are always loose. Every time you park your car, you need to put stones under the wheels. To make sure it doesn't move. Right? So, at first you're not so aware, you're a bit careless. See a car knocks somebody's, you know, garden down. And, you're responsible. And, for it, because you know it. You have knowledge of it. See, here it says, as long as the owner has knowledge. If the owner didn't have that knowledge, then he's not responsible. But when the owner has knowledge, he becomes responsible. That's the principle. When the owner has knowledge that something can cause harm to another and doesn't do something about it, he bears the responsibility. That's the principle. Draw the principles from the judgments. And let's draw another area here in the book of Exodus. We look at chapter 22, verse 1 and 2. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. If the thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. Principle behind it, it gives you the element of self-defense, which is still present in our laws today. Right? Self-defense. But it has to be proven. So that if the thief comes into your house, dies there,